Hey, good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Hi. How you doing? Well, it's been, what am I in, the fifth week with this bronchitis stuff, Kathy? 5 weeks? I do apologize for the raspy, nasty coffee hitting the mute button all the time. This sucker just won't let go. So, you know, once again tonight, here we are. Barack Obama is hard at work. What is this, day three? They're doing it, aren't they? Right. MSNBC, CNN, day three. What are they going to do on day 912? Is that going to be out there? I don't know. I don't know how long they're going to do it. It's starting to become a big irritation. But a lot happened today. First, press briefing with the new press secretary. And Barack Obama showed up in the press quarters. For a surprise visit today, the reception at the State Department for the new Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, and a couple of appointments, George Mitchell and Richard Holbrooke, that I think are in the moving in the right direction. You know, what do I know? But it seems like a good idea. But this morning, Bush reversed several of the criminal activities that George W. Bush and his crew should be in prison for. Regarding the Bush administration's war on the rest of the world under the euphemism war on terror, he signed executive orders to shut down Guantanamo Terrorist Detention Center within a year and to ban torture. He made it very clear, we will not do that. He signed these orders after, I'm sure you've seen the pictures, after meeting with 16 retired military officers, admirals and generals. Let's see the right wing attack that decision. Huh? Well, of course they will, because that's all Republicans know how to do. That's all conservatives know how to do, is tear things down and destroy things. But 16 retired flag officers who Obama said, and nobody has contradicted this, Obama said these officers pleaded with him to stand up for human rights and American values. In this phony war on terrorism. You know, you can't make war on a tactic, damn it. I just wish that we could drop that phrase. How about war on international criminals or something? But anyway, Obama said, as these generals and admirals stood behind him and applauded, Obama said, quote, "They made an extraordinary impression on me," end quote. And then after signing the order, Obama said, "The message we are sending around the world is that the United States intends to prosecute the ongoing struggle against violence and terrorism, and we're going to do so vigilantly, we're going to do so effectively, but we're going to do so in a manner that's consistent with our values and our ideals." What a change. What a change from the death, wallowing, decaying Bush and Cheney. I mean, what a change this is to have the President of the United States have to say this, but okay, after 8 years of these rat bastards, yeah, he's got to say it, that once again, we are going to follow the rule of law. We're going to follow our own Constitution, our own rules put together by our military where it concerns interrogations, international law, where it concerns this sort of nasty-ass activity. But what a refreshing thing. The President of the United States says, yeah, we're going to go back to the rule of law. Oh, my God. Obama went on and said, quote, "We think that it is precisely our ideals that give us the strength and the moral high ground to be able to effectively deal with the unthinking violence that we see around the world. We intend to win the fight. And we're going to win it on our terms." And to the extent that there is a fight going on, I think that fight can be mitigated to a great degree by beginning, and I think Obama will do this, beginning to acknowledge some of the legitimate claims of the people that have declared acts of aggression against us. You know, what a novel idea that is, right? In that vein, he decided to appoint George Mitchell to be a special envoy to the Middle East. Now, how long has it been since we've had a special envoy to the Middle East? And this is the first time that I'm aware of that we've had excuse me, damn, I'm sorry, that we've had an Arab American as an envoy to the Middle East, George Mitchell. His father is, let me see here. His father's from Ireland, I believe, and his mother is from Lebanon. Yeah, Mitchell's father was of Irish descent. His mother, Mary Saad, was a textile worker who immigrated to the United States from Lebanon at the age of 18. You can get all the information you want about George Mitchell by going to Wikipedia. It's all there. Since 1995, Mitchell was active in the Northern Ireland peace process. He was a special envoy to Northern Ireland for his results there in bringing peace to the troubles between the Protestants and the Catholics. He was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom in March of 1999. Al Gore almost picked him to be his running mate in 2000 and had the Supreme Court not stepped in and given the election to Bush and had Gore picked George Mitchell, who would have been the first Arab American to serve as the Vice President of the United States. You know, woulda, coulda, shoulda, none of that happened. But the fact that he is of Arabic descent, I think, is going to help. His mother was Lebanese. In addition, they have picked, who's the other guy? Richard Holbrooke, to be a special envoy to Afghanistan and Pakistan. I mean, what a novel idea to actually address. And again, I'm not, you know, I'm not trying to second guess or to try to telepathically understand what the hell is going to happen with George Mitchell and Richard Holbrooke. But the mere fact that two people have been assigned, two people with experience, and I don't need to know all the details about what they've done. I'm sure that at this point, sure, it'll come out. But those of you who have already checked all this out and, well, Holbrooke did this and Mitchell did that, okay. You know, nobody's perfect. Jesus. But these two guys, at least I think they understand. Mitchell certainly understands religious strife and how to bring about. Northern Ireland is not Israel-Palestine. Duh. But there was an awful lot of bombing and killing and slaughter going on between people who are essentially the same. The religion differed. Palestinians and Jews are essentially the same. The religions differ. As far as Afghanistan and Pakistan are concerned, maybe Holbrooke will get Obama's ear and let him know that the best thing the United States could possibly do concerning that part of the world is to leave as quickly and orderly as possible, and to start making contingency plans on what to do when the recently elected government of Pakistan is overthrown by a radical, out-of-control Islamist military that is practically owned by the Taliban at this point. And then this Islamist military has access to nuclear weapons. I think that should be the focus, not American troops and NATO troops doing what? You know, I've said before on the program, and I'd love to hear if anybody has an idea, why do we have troops in Afghanistan? I'm serious. I'm not, you know, forget the pipeline issue. Forget the madrasas issue. Why? Why do we have 30,000 troops in Afghanistan and Barack Obama intimating that they're more on the way? I mean, what the hell is this? Does anybody know? Because I honestly do not. What else? Banning torture, closing Guantanamo. Oh, yeah, the other thing. I'll get to this when we come back. It's the freeing of government records. We'll chat about that in a second. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Know the M.
You're living in hell. Think you're in heaven, but you're living in hell. Think you're in It's the Mike Malloy Show on Nova M Radio. Talk radio matters here.
Past the hour. Did I mention this already about pickles? I guess I didn't. I think it's our final reminiscence through pickles, addled brain. We'll jump into the Wayback Machine to the summer of 2004, as the Bush versus Kerry showdown was coming up in the election. The second election by these bastards was about to be stolen. And in this election, Pickles reminds the voters of all the glorious accomplishments of her Bushy's first 4 years. You'll find this interesting. And then tomorrow night, we'll finally say a good riddance to this bastard, George Bush. We have a two-part segment that we're going to play for you tomorrow night. There is no way to encapsulate the damage that he has done in 8 years into a radio program of any length. But Kathy has picked... as much through the debris of Bush's presidency and picked some of the more memorable things that he said. It's a two-part segment. One segment is about this jerk's foreign policy decisions, and then a separate clip covering everything else. And both of them run, what, about 10 minutes? So that's Friday night. We figure you got all day Saturday and Sunday to get drunk, so we're going to do it tomorrow night. And oh, my God, I've heard some of it. And just listening to it again, it's like, I don't know, it's like a monster that has died. And then you hear scratching at the door at 3 in the morning. You look out the upstairs window, and there it is, covered with dirt and worms. And, you know, it's come back from the grave. You remember that stuff, right? When you were a kid, you remember those comic books, Tales from the Crypt and The Crypt Keeper. And oh, my God, horrible stuff. Listening to some of this stuff that Kathy's put together is very reminiscent for me of Tales from the Crypt. Anyway, back to the other thing that Bush did today. He freed the historical records of the office of the president, the vice president, that George W. Bush and Dick Cheney tried to end the exposure forever. And as Robert Perry points out, when authoritarian forces seize control of a government, they typically move first against the public's access to information, under the theory that a confused population can be more easily manipulated, which is very true. They take aim at the radio stations, TV, and newspapers, right? That's usually what happens. In the case of George Bush in 2001, he also took aim at historical records, giving himself and his family indefinite control over documents covering the 12 years of his father's terms as president and vice president, and his own terms. So effectively, what Bush tried to do was to cover up 20 years of American history. 20 years of American history. So it's significant that one of Barack Obama's first acts as president was to revoke the Bush family's power over that history and replace it with an easier set of regulations for accessing the records. And as Perry says, Bush, on taking office in January 2001, immediately delayed the scheduled release of documents from the presidencies of Ronald Reagan and George Herbert Walker Bush. Right? Remember that? So on the first working day in office, Obama wasted no time in reversing that policy. This is the infamous Executive Order 13233, granting the sitting president, as well as former presidents or ex-vice presidents or their heirs, their families, out to the 20th generation, I guess, veto power over release of documents. In other words, Bush was giving himself and his family effective control over key chapters of 20 years of American history. And presumably at some point, as Robert Perry writes, that power would have passed to Bush's daughters, Jenna and Barbara, and then to their kids, and on and on and on, giving the family a kind of dynastic control over how Americans would understand key events that have occurred over the past 20 years. So, and with that hidden forever, then the myths self-serving as they are, could become a substitute for accurate history, which would even go further to protect Bush's history. I think as we come out of the fog, we're going to realize every day, to a greater and greater and greater degree, what these bastards tried to do and accomplished. Keith Olbermann, the past two nights, has had this guy on who used to work for the National Security Agency, the first whistleblower to come forward since this son of a bitch went back to his rat hole in Texas. And this whistleblower is really laying out now some of the horrors regarding the spying that Bush claimed was in the interest of national security. It was in the interest of maintaining their secrecy. Some of their targets were news people, especially New York Times, Washington Post, writers. Who are they talking to? Where are they getting their information? I mean, this makes Nixon and his enemies list look like a bunch of little kindergartners slapping around making mud pies on some playground. Bush and Cheney, like I said the other night, they were incipient fascists. They were just too much of cowards to have pulled the trigger.
Mike Malloy Show. Talk radio matters here.
I'm gonna leave the city, got to get away. I'm gonna leave the city, got to get away.
It's about 25 before the hour. Obama has restricted lobbyists. He said, was it today or yesterday? He said, as of today, lobbyists will be subject to stricter limits than under any other administration in history. If you are a lobbyist entering my administration, you will not be able to work on matters you lobbied on or in the agencies you lobbied during the previous two years. When you leave government, you will not be able to lobby my administration for as long as I am president. End quote. Now, this is going to play hell with two lobbying shops, the military-industrial complex and the Israeli lobbyists, the places like AIPAC. Those two, which have had unlimited access, revolving door access, going all the way back to Reagan. All the way back to Reagan. So for the past, 28 years, there have been zero restrictions, in effect, zero restrictions on this revolving door of Israeli lobby people and military industrial complex lobby people, and also not to mention people who worked for I always think of Gail Norton, who was a lobbyist for the lead industry until Bush made her Secretary of Interior, for Christ's sake. Just horrifying stuff. So Obama today, or was it yesterday, put an end to it. He also froze White House salaries, which is more or less, symbolic thing. But, good for him for doing it. In other actions, he created a task force, Obama did, that would have 30 days to recommend policies on handling terror suspects who are detained in the future. Specifically, the group that he is putting together, this task force, will look at where those detainees should be held, since Guantanamo is going to close and it's going to enter into the history books of this country, like Andersonville and other places of extreme murder and torture and violation of everything decent that this country has tried to do so often in its history. And so often we didn't. But no more Guantanamo. Also, the Obama is requiring now that all U.S. personnel who are involved in interrogating detainees should follow or will follow the U.S. Army Field Manual, where it concerns that particular activity. The manual explicitly prohibits threats, coercion, physical abuse, and waterboarding. So now also he says he's going to move swiftly to meet challenges in the Middle East. I hope that that doesn't stymie him or devour him, as it has so many U.S. presidents since Truman was the first nation representing the United States, was the first nation on earth, the first leader to recognize the establishment of the state of Israel. He called yesterday. He called Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak, Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert, Jordan's King Abdullah, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas, and he emphasized that he would work to consolidate the ceasefire between Israel and Hamas in Gaza. What else? Oh yeah, he started today with the private meeting regarding the economic horror that seems to get worse and worse in this country every day, excuse me, which is, you could take it as a signal to the millions of us that are struggling with all this stuff, that he is serious about this. Democrats in Congress, both House and Senate, are preparing an $825 billion economic recovery plan for a floor vote next week. There's plans in there to extend and increase unemployment benefits, to give states $87 billion to deal with Medicaid shortfalls and help unemployed people retain health care, all that. And of course, the Republicans are starting to oppose this. Even it is the nature of Republicans to oppose everything that helps human beings. Because Republicans are vermin. They are just filth. They're what you scrape off your shoes after you've traveled in a subway somewhere. This, of course, is in contradiction, and no surprise here, to what they said in the couple of months since Barack Obama won the nomination. Oh, yeah, we're going to work in a bipartisan way. No, they don't. It is not the nature of Republicans to work in a bipartisan anything. This is not what they do. They are destroyers. They are obstructionists. Like I said before, the Republican Party should be banned. It just banned, because you can't find anything in 75 years that they have done that has been in the best interest of the United States. Not one thing. Oh, granted, there have been a lot of things that Democrats have done that have been contrary to the best interest of this country. But I think the Democrats have done, I mean, the ratio between good and bad, good being helping America, bad being not helping us, the Democrats have a fairly good ratio of helping. The Republicans have nothing. You know, I've said this before, I'll say it again and again and again and again. If anyone out there can come up with something that good that Republicans have done that benefited this country, both domestically and in our relationships with other countries, in the past half century, tell me. If you're too much of a goddamn coward to call this program, like most of you right-wingers are, or you are so inarticulate you can't maintain a conversation, then send an email. Because I'd like to know what the hell it is.
Mike, most right-wingers this week are heavily, heavily medicated. I think there's been a run on Ativan and Xanax and Jack Daniels at the pharmacy and liquor stores, so they're not going to wake up until February, if then.
Oh, you are just a terrible, terrible woman. But you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. The other thing that Obama is doing, pretty busy agenda, huh? The other thing Obama is doing today, he ordered the closure of the so-called black sites. Black in the sense of darkness, no light, no exposure, no examination. The sites where CIA and European security services have tortured people. Huh? Yeah. He ordered, quote, all permanent detention facilities overseas closed, according to the draft of this order. There are at least eight such places, according to published reports. The Bush administration, of course, never revealed the number of these torture rooms or the location. Several were said to be in Eastern Europe. And in that, he was copying, the little Bush piglet was copying his psychopathic old man, who during the Reagan and Bush 1 years, they set up torture chambers, torture rooms all over Honduras. In the Honduran military bases, Honduras was nothing but a little whore, no offense to sex workers, for the United States, and we were the big, bad, bruising, slap-em-around pimp. The Hondurans did exactly what we told them to do. Where it concerned Nicaragua, where it concerned El Salvador, where it concerned Guatemala, it didn't make any difference. And in addition, on the Honduran military bases, on so many of them, and this was discovered once the Honduran military no longer ran the country. When these bases were examined, torture chambers, stuff that would have made Saddam Hussein green with envy. And they were financed, organized, and trained, the torturers trained, by us. And where did all that occur? Right down here in Columbus, Georgia, School of the Americas, Fort Benning. So the model that Bush and Cheney and the rest of these monsters used was set during Reagan Bush 1 years on how to get away with this, how to set it up on foreign soil, how to send certain people for what in the Bush years was called extraordinary rendition, which simply meant kidnapping, stealing people, taking them to a place where they could be tortured, their screams wouldn't be heard, and no nasty-ass invasive press would be around to find out what it was about. When the truth of all this comes out, of the criminality, the scope, the depth of the criminal, this is why a commission is so desperately needed. Okay, President Obama, let's look forward. But you know, how many times in the history of black liberation in this country has it been said by black leaders, we cannot understand where we're going until we are fully aware of where we've been? How many times? And how many times have white people with any brains have also said the same thing? How do you know where you are or where you're going until you understand where you've been? So if the proper commissions are ever put together, the crimes of the Bush administration are going to scare the hell out of everyone who's an American citizen. In God and corporations, they stand for piety that doesn't suffer rivals. They're waving flags and guns and quoting from the Bible.
It's okay, Republicans. The pain will be over soon. Take a deep breath. Find your happy place. It's more of Mike Malloy.
Take a deep breath. Find your happy. Do we still have happy places? There's a real circus going on with in the Senate from these Republicans, Arlen Specter and John Cornyn. It's amazing. The vote yesterday by Republicans, it was delayed on the nomination of Eric Holder to be Attorney General. And regardless of what the mainstream media is putting out there, some of the reason, or one of the key reasons, is Cornyn and Specter apparently had been designated the ones to cover Bush and Gonzalez and John Yoo and the rest of these people's asses where it concerns torture, you know, crimes against humanity, war crimes. And the Cornyn told reporters regarding Holder's position on whether or not he intends to prosecute the thugs who condoned or carried out the interrogations. Cornyn says about Eric Holder, quote, "He's been very ambiguous. We need more clarification," end quote. Now, there's a small group of Republican senators on the committee who met privately on Holder's confirmation and agreed that, quote, "another few days was necessary," end quote, said Jeff Sessions, Alabama. The ones that are holding this up are, for the most part, white Southerners, with the exception of Arlen Specter. But they are white Southerners. And one of the reasons is because Eric Holder is a black man. Do you know anything about Eric Holder's family history? Back in 1963, a woman named Vivian Malone Jones. I happen to remember this because at the time I had a very early job working for Look magazine in the South. And I was real young. Not making any money, but Vivian Jones and a young man named James Hood went up against Governor George Wallace and integrated the University of Alabama. They were the first two students. Steve Weissman wrote about this today. He said their courage and that of hundreds and thousands of other black people in the South inspired black and white students throughout the country, who in turn built a movement of millions that at the very least kept Washington from bombing Vietnam back to the Stone Age, as some of our military leaders wanted. And now, nearly half a century later, Vivian Malone's brother-in-law, Eric Holder, was telling a Senate committee that as the incoming attorney general, he viewed waterboarding as torture and the Geneva Conventions as the law of the land. And as Steve Weissman writes, history unfolds in wondrous ways, especially when people have the courage to fight back until unjust laws and against unjust laws and unjust wars. One of the reasons the circle seems so small where it concerns black folk who are rising to positions of power right now is because, first of all, is a very small cadre of black leaders who survived the 60s, the 50s and 60s in the South. How many pictures, you know, working for Look back then, I can remember the pictures of the Greyhound buses that were set on fire because of freedom riders that were just trying to make a point that black people could ride a goddamn Greyhound and go to the bathroom in a Greyhound bus station that didn't have Negro or some worse word on it for people of color. And how many of those people were beaten? How many were killed? How many were so humiliated? So here we go. Vivian Malone's brother-in-law, ta-da, Eric Holder, is about to become the new Attorney General of the United States. Now, that's one of the reasons it's ingrained in these white Southern men. It is so deep in them, Jeff Sessions can't even talk right. I mean, you listen to Jeff Sessions. And who's that freak from Alabama, that other one? What's his name, Kathy? Do you remember him? Who's the guy from Alabama? The other one's
got that funny comb over. Well, we don't know anything about none of that.
Even Lindsey Graham, a white male Southern senator, says he's getting kind of tired about the delay. Lindsey Graham said, quote, "I don't want the hard left to make policy, but I also don't want the hard right to make policy." He said that while he, quote, understood Cornyn's concerns about Holder's going to do about torture, Lindsey Graham said, quote, "Holder has handled it just about right so far." But Cornyn said he was concerned that Holder's views could mean intelligence officials who participate in what may be regarded as torture could be subject to prosecution. Now, you know what the subtext of that is? A lot of people are going to disagree with me, but here it comes. Back in the day, people like Cornyn and the rest of these white male Southerners had license to torture and lynch and do anything they wanted to rape, pillage black people in the South. Who was going to do anything about it? Every once in a while, Eisenhower or Kennedy would have to send the goddamn army down just to get people into school. But this was always a right of white male Southerners. To lynch, drag behind a truck, murder and bury them in a dirt dam in Philadelphia, Mississippi. Anything that they wanted to do, who was going to stop them? And now all of a sudden, what's this? This happens to be Eric Holder, an African-American who probably, hopefully, if it works out the way you and I want it to, will go after the white men who ordered the torture and killing of people of color. Now, when has that happened in this country with the force of the federal government behind it? So we have a bunch of white Southern senators. Well, we're a little bit concerned about whether or not Mr. Holder, you know, and it kills them every time they have to preface the name of a black man with the term Mr. Oh, boy, do they hate that. Now, how do I know? How do I know that? I'll tell you how I know that. I live here, and I've lived here for 45 years. That's how I know that. So that's what this is about Eric Holder.
Oh, God damn, you mean they're going to have a nigger in that office? And he might go after white people?
Yes. Welcome back. It's 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program. At the bottom of this hour, we're going to play for you all 5 minutes and 40 seconds of a speech made in the British House of Lords by a Jewish member of parliament there, veteran Jewish British lawmaker Sir Gerald Kaufman. And in the speech, he compares the Israeli offensive in Gaza to the Nazis who forced his family to flee from Poland. I think you should hear this. That's obviously the reason we're going to play it. Prairie 2, our economics advisor, writes in, Mike, new unemployment claims reached nearly 600,000 for last week alone. But the real number may have passed 600,000 as states are failing to process new claims in a timely manner. Overloaded computer systems are crashing repeatedly and overworked staff can't keep up. This number, of course, does not include people who are not eligible, like part-time workers, illegals, and the self-employed, who include hundreds of thousands of small business closings, truck drivers who can't make the payments on their rigs, building contractors and subcontractors, and on and on and on. Contract labor is ubiquitous throughout corporate America. Microsoft, who is laying off 5,000 employees, also has a legion of contract workers who will feel the axe as well. The well-educated, who always were recession-proof, are finding an MBA won't keep them off the heating grate with the working poor. Madison Avenue is starting to sell the virtues of thrift and cutting back. They're even starting to paint the 1930s, as something romantic. It's like old Russians feeling nostalgic for the days of the purges because old Uncle Joe knew how to do it. It is, of course, Republicans who are trying to sell the notion that this is the fault of the consumer and everybody needs to cut back. Well, everybody but them. Oh, and China announced today that there will be 2 executions and 1 life term so far for the tainted milk scandal. Here, we give the corrupt golden parachutes. Yeah, we've talked about that before. That's from Prairie 2. We've talked about that before. There are societies on Earth that China being the main The main one, China and the United States, are joined now, like conjoined twins, joined at the wallet, the hip, the gut, the stomach. And you never hear any complaints about that, do you, huh? No complaints at all. The executions that occur in China that are arguably are not as a result of due process. But then you have these corporate thugs who cause illness, sickness, death. And the Chinese have figured out a very simple way. When they are caught and when they are brought to trial, quote, quote, when the trial is over, they are given the death sentence and they're taken out and shot. Would that we had a similar system. So many times I've said that in this country. I'm against the death penalty. I'm against capital punishment completely and totally. So rather than executing our bastards, you know what would be appropriate? Just lock them up for the rest of their lives. You know, no more this guy, the head of Merrill Lynch. What was this big story today? $9,000 area rug, or was it 90? I think it was $90,000. You know, just the freewheeling disregard of these predatory bastards for anything that remotely resembles ethical behavior or decent conduct, while they rip and rape and pillage and loot the entire economic system and the rest of America. You know, what recourse do we have? What are you going to do? Sue them? What are you going to do if you had a big account with Merrill Lynch from money that you earned, that you put in there? What are you going to do? Nothing. What's anybody going to do? Nothing. What's his name? The former head of president of Merrill Lynch was fired today. Oh, well, that's terrible. Now he'll have to go spend the hundreds upon hundreds of millions of dollars that he stole. But nothing happens to these people. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. And it makes you wonder why Americans, average people like me, are so cynical about these sons of bitches. You know, like, what's going to happen to the thievery? I remember, and so do you, the SNL crisis back in the 80s. Whatever happened to those people? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Except you and I paid for it. And now we're going to pay for this. Now, I'm not one to make a big deal about paying for anything, because I know it's all a skin game. The money in this country is essentially worthless. The only thing that props it up is we think it's okay. And a lot of people, a lot of the nations around the world think it's okay. So they continue to deal with it. But you and I both know, or we should at this point, that American money is useless. There's nothing worthless. There's nothing behind it except debt. That's it. It's not backed by gold or silver or bat guano or uranium or pimple cream. It's not backed by anything. Which kind of makes sense when you think about it. I mean, how in an economy that's a global economy is supposed to be supporting the livelihoods of 6 or 7 billion people, how do you have solid assets, something, what would you have? Diamonds, gold, silver, uranium, chunks of the moon? What could you have to back the paper currencies? Well, you know, what could you have? That's way, way over my head. I'm not even going to try to go there. But I do know this. Our money is only good because we keep telling ourselves it's good. That's all. That's all. That's the only reason. Maybe Prairie 2 would disagree and could enlighten me and so on and so forth. But that's my take on it. All right, let's do some phone calls tonight, since if I don't stop talking here, I'm going to have to replace my larynx. Wait till I have to go someplace, Kathy, and the doctor says, all right, Mr. Malloy, you're going to have to remain absolutely silent for the next 2 weeks. That would render me unemployed. The number here is 800-989-1480. So if you would like to comment on some of these actions taken today by Barack Obama, the activities of these white male Republican Southerners in the Senate who can't bear the idea of an African-American attorney general who will go after white criminals. You know, whatever you want to bring up, I'll be happy to put you on the air here, okay? 800-989-1480. Let's start with Steve, who's calling from Minneapolis. Steve, welcome to the program.
Hi. I wanted to thank you and Kathy for doing such a good job during the election.
Oh, well, you're welcome. You have to turn your radio off, Steve. Don't listen to the radio. You have to listen in the phone. Just turn it way down, okay?
I just turned it off.
Yeah, it'll make you crazy trying to listen in the phone and listen to the radio.
You mentioned 50 years of Republicans, I'm going to bring up Eisenhower. He warned us about, I thought he did some good things, warned us about the military-industrial complex. He taxed multimillionaires 90%, did the federal highway system. I think one of his comments was one ship would build 1,000 schools or 100
yeah,
schools.
Yeah, yeah. His what was that called? The Iron Speech of Iron, or whatever it's called, Eisenhower, when he pointed out the absolute insanity of buying and building and spending the nation's resources on weaponry.
But that's going, you know, probably 50 years, but at least, you know, in the Republican Party used to have, you know, some small but good liberal elements and wanting to see money spent well. But it's, I think there's elements in the society in many ways. I think it's the same puppet masters, and Democrats talk a better game, but they went right along with the war in Iraq.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. I think you're right, Steve. Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Got a boogie. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Speakers, it'll be our secret.
21 past the hour. All right, let's go back to your phone calls here. Ryan is calling from Madison, Wisconsin, listening on the mic. Hey, hey, Ryan.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Hi, first-time caller. Hope you take it easy on me. I'm a conservative up here in Madison, but I do listen to you. I just wanted to call up and say I agree with you that these people who put our financial system in the piss hole should be punished, and they're not.
Okay, you and I agree with that. Do we also agree that the reason we're in this is, to a great extent, the fault of the Bush administration that refused any kind of supervision on what has turned out to be predatory capitalism that has left us where we are? Let's just come to, you know, forget all of our problems overseas. Let's just focus here. We're in a world of hurt. Do you agree that the refusal of the Republicans or conservatives or the Bush administration or a combination of all three to provide the necessary oversight that we all know? I mean, that's why we have that's why you have a PIN number when you go to take money out of your ATM, because if you didn't, somebody else would come up and say, oh, well, you know, what the hell? I think I'll take some of Ryan's money. So what the Bush crime family did, and let's see if you agree with this, they said for a certain group in this country, no oversight is necessary. Go, boys. And then they did this.
I keep hearing on both sides, because I do listen to both Republican and Democrat radios.
But who's been in charge of a appointing the regulatory agencies for the past 8 years. Now, come on, this both sides stuff only goes so far, Ryan.
Well, what about John McCain on record saying that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac need to have oversight?
Well, I don't care what some Republicans said. McCain had no power. The only one that had power with this was the executive branch of government ordering, to the extent that the legislative branch had any power under Bush and Cheney, ordering them to confirm people who would then turn away and not provide any oversight whatsoever. It doesn't make any difference what somebody wished. You know, I wish that the world was full of fairies so my daughter could actually see one. But that doesn't mean anything, you see? So, while we agree, I'm just checking, Ryan, while we agree that the economy is in a mess, do we also agree where 90% of the blame, the other 10% rests on Clinton, where 90% of the blame lies in the refusal to provide the necessary regulatory oversight?
Well, I agree that if that is the case, then yes, I agree.
All right, now what's the solution?
Sides, so I'm not agreeing 100%. I don't know.
Well, you don't have to. That's fine.
If that is the truth, then yes, I do agree.
So what do you think is necessary to make sure this doesn't happen again?
Well, I definitely think there needs to be oversight, and if you can't afford the loan, then you shouldn't get the loan.
Well, no, we're not talking about loans. We're talking about the con artists who ran this Ponzi scheme on Wall Street. And I'm not talking about Bernie Madoff, who made off with $50 billion. I'm talking about Lehman Brothers and AIG and Merrill Lynch and Bank of America and these monstrous, massive corporations. None of the money that we're being asked to pay right now is going to help homeowners who might have stepped outside of their income bracket and said, well, I can't afford a $400,000 house, but I think I'll try to get one. That's not where the money's going. Not a dime has gone to those people yet.
It's going
to these big predatory capitalist organizations who said, hey, nobody's looking. Let's steal them blind because the stupid American taxpayers, Democrats and Republicans, will have to pay it off.
Yeah.
All right.
That's me paying for it. So.
Well, it's all of us. Ryan, thanks for checking in. I appreciate
I appreciate it. It's taking a little easy on Bush. I like I said, I just don't like it when people disrespect him like that. So.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm sorry you feel that way, but my mama taught me a long time ago, the only way you can give respect is to somebody who's earned it. And George Bush has earned nothing but contempt. That's why 80% of America hated his guts when it came time for him to leave. Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate you checking in.
Ryan might not want to listen tomorrow night.
Oh, to Bush? Well, it's just Bush in his own words.
That's my point.
Well,
but I have another point about Bush and Ryan's call. It just reminds me of that analogy we talked about years ago. Like somebody tossed Bush the keys to a Porsche and loaned it to him for 8 years, and he drove it into a wall and tossed it back and said, there you go, all ready for you.
Yeah, or why did you let me drive it? You knew I was going to run it into a brick wall. I mean, Jesus.
You didn't stop me from running into the wall.
Yeah, you did.
What's your problem?
Yeah, right. All right, we're going to take a break here, aren't we? Yeah, we're taking a break here. When we come back, we're going to play this thing from British Jewish Member of Parliament Sir Gerald Kaufman. So fasten your seatbelt for this one. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Truth seekers, time to snuggle up with your favorite screamer, more Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. All right, Sir Gerald Kaufman is a veteran British Jewish lawmaker. He has compared the Israeli offensive in Gaza to the Nazis who forced his family to flee from Poland. Kaufman was brought up as an Orthodox Jew and a Zionist, and he said, quote, "My grandmother was ill in bed when the Nazis came to her hometown. A German soldier shot her dead in her bed. My grandmother did not die to provide cover for Israeli soldiers murdering Palestinian grandmothers in Gaza." Now, we're going to play this thing for you. He is standing in the House of Lords and addresses, I think he addresses or is addressed by the person who is presiding that day. And I want you to hear this. This is Sir Gerald Kaufman.
Madam Deputy Speaker, I was brought up as an Orthodox Jew and a Zionist. On a shelf in our kitchen was a tin box of the Jewish National Fund, into which we put coins to help the pioneers building a Jewish presence in Palestine. I first went to Israel in 1961, and I've been there since more times than I can count. I had family in Israel, and I have friends in Israel. One of them fought in the wars of 1956, 1967, and 1973, and was wounded in two of them. The tie-clip which I'm wearing is made from a campaign decoration awarded to him, which he presented to me. I've known most of the prime ministers of Israel, starting with the founding prime minister, David Ben-Gurion. Golda Meir was my friend. So was Yigal Alon, the deputy prime minister, who as a general won the Negev for Israel in the 1948 War of Independence. My parents came to Britain as refugees from Poland. Most of their families were subsequently murdered by the Nazis in the Holocaust. My grandmother was ill in bed when the Nazis came to her hometown of Staszów. A German soldier shot her dead in her bed. Madam Deputy Speaker, my grandmother did not die to provide cover for Israeli soldiers murdering Palestinian grandmothers in Gaza. The present Israeli government ruthlessly and cynically exploit the continuing guilt among Gentiles over the slaughter of Jews in the Holocaust as justification for their murder of Palestinians. The implication is that Jewish lives are precious, but the lives of Palestinians do not count. On Sky News a few days ago, the spokeswoman for the Israeli army, Major Leibovich, was asked about the Israeli killing of, at that time, 800 Palestinians. The total is now 1,000. She replied instantly, 500 of them were militants. That was the reply of a Nazi. I suppose the Jews fighting for their lives in the Warsaw Ghetto could have been dismissed as militants. The Israeli Foreign Minister, Tzipi Livni, asserts that her government will have no dealings with Hamas because they're terrorists. Tzipi Livni's father was Eitan Livni, Chief Operations Officer of the terrorist Irgun Svai Leumi, who organised the blowing up of the King David Hotel in Jerusalem, in which 91 victims were killed, including 4 Jews. Israel was born out of Jewish terrorism. Jewish terrorists hanged 2 British sergeants and booby-trapped their corpses. Irgun, together with the terrorist Stern Gang, massacred 254 Palestinians in 1948 in the village of Deir Yassin. Today, the present Israeli government indicate that they will be willing, in circumstances acceptable to them, to negotiate with the Palestinian President Abbas of Fatah. It's too late for that, Madam Deputy Speaker. They could have negotiated with Fatah's previous leader, Yasser Arafat, who was a friend of mine. Instead, they besieged him in a bunker in Ramallah, where I visited him. It's because of the failings of Fatah since Arafat's death that Hamas won the election, the Palestinian election in 2006. Hamas is a deeply nasty organization, but it was democratically elected, and it is the only game in town. the boycotting of Hamas, including by our own government, has been a culpable error from which dreadful consequences have followed. The great Israeli Foreign Minister Abba Eban, with whom I campaigned for peace on many platforms, said, "You make peace by talking to your enemies." However many Palestinians the Israelis murder in Gaza, they cannot solve this existential problem by military means. Whenever and however the fighting ends, there will still be 1.5 million Palestinians in Gaza and 2.5 million more Palestinians in the West Bank, who are treated like dirt by the Israelis, with hundreds of roadblocks and with the ghastly denizens of the illegal Jewish settlements harassing them as well. The time will come, not so long from now, when they will outnumber the Jewish population in Israel. It's time for our government to make clear to the Israeli government that its conduct and policies are unacceptable, and to impose a total arms ban on Israel. It is time for peace, but real peace, not the solution by conquest, which is the Israelis' real goal, but which is impossible for them to achieve. They're not simply war criminals, they're fools.
They're not simply war criminals, they're fools. Now, excuse me, just from a personal perspective, in the programs that I've done since this invasion, I have to say that the numbers of the number of emails from Jewish listeners who were incensed or angry at what I was saying fell off to practically zero. When I have brought up this issue before, now that means one of two things to me: either those listeners don't listen to the program anymore, or they have given up and just said, "Well, Malloy's out of his mind," or there was a certain element of understanding among some of these listeners that, yeah, this time the IDF had gone too far. I don't know. But I do know that the number of letters or emails, I should say, from people who did not like the fact that I was criticizing IDF over this dropped off considerably. There are a couple of hardcore jerks that still write to me insisting that there's no such thing as Palestine, or there's no such thing as Palestinians, and there never was, and yada, 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 yada. And for the most part, I'm getting to the point where just ignoring that. I used to try to answer that. I used to send links to, like the sound I just played from MP Kaufman. But I don't anymore, because there's no point to it. You know, there's no point. So I wanted to play that, though, because it is, I think it is, this is the right term, more valid to hear that kind of criticism from someone who knew Golda Meir, who knew Abba Eban, who knew Ben-Gurion, who knew Arafat, who has family in Israel, who is a self-proclaimed Zionist, who understands about the terror activities of Irgun and the Stern Gang. Every time I bring that up, I get these snotty emails, not this time. But any time I've brought up Irgun or the Stern Gang, which were terrorist organizations, just purely and simply, they are the ones that invented the idea of a car bomb. It was the Stern Gang, or Irgun, it's hard to tell which one, but they are the ones who invented the car bomb. I'm just throwing that in as an historical point. But the people who at certain periods of history are declared to be terrorists, at other periods of history are declared to be founding fathers, or the establishment of the state, those who gave their blood for the establishment of the state. And if innocent people died, and if acts of terror were committed, the greater good was the establishment of the state. And I think this is one of the reasons that I absolutely reject completely and totally the emails that I've gotten, not just here, but over the years on radio programs I've done, that involve this terrible things that happen between Jew and Palestinian in the Middle East. Terrible things that happen. I don't have to apologize to anybody for my position or my point of view on this, because it comes after an awful lot of study on this. Like I said, back during the first Intifada, when I had Meir Kahana on a radio program 20 years ago or more, and you know, I'm sitting there trying to, you know, talk to him as though I knew what I was talking about, and I didn't. And Kahana made it very clear on the air. It was very embarrassing for me. But, you know, he asked me, you know, what have you read? What do you know about this issue? What is your scholarship regarding the Middle East? Why are you sitting here talking to me like you know what you're talking about? And it was a point well taken. And I started with his book, They Must Go, and read everything I could get my hands on. So I wanted you to hear, though, from MP Kaufman. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. About 10 before the hour. If you want to see that YouTube video in its entirety, I posted a link at my website, MikeMalloy.com, of Sir, is it Gerald Kaufman? Is it Sir, Member of Parliament? You can check it out yourself. Back to your phone calls. Steve is calling from, oh, this is Steve from Dover, Delaware, our former mortgage broker who, I was hoping to call in last night, but better late than never. Hi, Steve.
How are you, Mike? First-time caller, long-time listener.
Oh, wait. I guess it's a different Steve. I'm sorry. We have another guy who calls regularly named Steve who was in the same basic business as yours, and he's been providing some information to us about the impending credit card collapse. But anyway, hi, Steve. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for taking my call. I was a former mortgage broker for 12 years, and I just wanted to give you real quick my insight on how we got in this mess. First of all, let me give you a little background. I consider myself a fiscal conservative. I vote Republican, Democrat. I usually try and vote for the best possible candidate. I'm really disappointed in the Congress and President Bush and Secretary Paulson giving this money to these big banks. There are over 8,000 financial institutions in this country, and most of them are conservative in nature that never dealt with subprime lending. They rely on deposits, and they rely on traditional lending to businesses and small business owners, et cetera. You're 20% down, 10% down, tax returns, et cetera. I never did any subprime loans in my life. I mostly dealt with second home investment properties.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that you don't have a constitutional right to own a home. It's called a privilege. You pay your bills on time, then you have, that's the first start in obtaining a home. Just like driving a car, you get caught drunk, you're going to lose your license. You have to wait till you turn 16 to drive. This actually started really, we had underwriters come to us in the late 90s, early 2000s. Now, these are the big boys. Wells Fargo, WaMu, Citigroup coming to us saying, listen, rules are starting to change. We are changing them ourselves, but we are also being pressured by people in Washington,
mm-hmm.
whether special interest groups, politicians wanting to expand home ownership to people who have traditionally been discriminated against, and that's people with poor credit and minorities. Now, minorities are getting a real bum rap on this because it's not the minorities that are causing this. It's people with the bad credit that are causing this, in my opinion. After 9/11, money became really easy to get. Lenders, big lenders now, not your small-town banks, lower the standards, and up to 2006, if you had a 580 middle credit score, Mike, with a collection up to $4,999, you had lenders that would give 100% financing. So you were speaking earlier to a gentleman who called and said he was Republican and about regulation. Yes, there was a lack of regulation. These banks should have never been allowed to give someone with a low credit score and a history of not paying your bills on time a home.
Well, Steve, let me make sure I'm understanding you. You are saying, if I'm hearing you right, that this entire collapse of the global financial system, including the financial system in this country, rests on the shoulders of what, 200,000, half a million, 2 million people who lied on their credit apps or who were given loans to buy a house that shouldn't? You don't want me to believe that, do you?
It wasn't just the people.
Okay, but I'm curious.
Mortgage brokers. I'm just talking about the mortgage situation because a lot of the financial trouble they're in started in the housing market and the mortgage market. Listen, there are crooks all over this country in the mortgage business taking advantage of people. You didn't even
right, but wait, it's way more than that. And I think you understand that when you have companies, when you have companies whose assets to liabilities ratio starts to get out of control because of their improper way they ran their corporations. You know, you can talk about any corporation that had nothing to do with homeowners or poor loans made to potential homeowners. I admit to you that or submit to you that, yeah, sure, some of the problem, some with the emphasis on some of the problem had to do with these subprime loans, the predatory lenders who made them and the half-witted buyers who thought they could get away with this. But it is so much bigger than that. I just hope you're not saying that this problem, because that's all you're focusing on. I hope you're not saying.
It is more than subprime. Let me give you an example. An option arm. There's no such thing as an option arm subprime loan. Are you familiar with an option arm?
Yes, to the extent that somebody who's not in the business can be. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Negative amortization occurs when someone has an option arm. You have an option to pay the principal and interest, the interest only, or below the interest. A lot of people are doing them. You're right. It's just not the subprime lending that caused this. It was subprime lending. It was these big financial institutions doing these crazy mortgage programs, which a lot of them were created for small business owners, stated income, stated assets. You know, there's a lot of crooked mortgage programs that are out there, but I also say out of the 8,000 financial institutions, most of your small-town banks where most people have their money, average people like me, that are now blue-collar workers, that rely on, you know, those small-town banks never dealt with these wacky type of mortgage programs. They said, we want 20% down. We want to see 2 years tax returns. We want to see bank statements, assets. We want to see your balance sheet.
I do understand. And Steve, I'm sorry, I've got to get ready here to take the break. I hear what you're saying, understand that. And I think most people who have been aware of this mess are aware of that aspect of it. These crazy loans that were put on the books by the financial institutions that took these things and then packaged them and sold them as investment instruments to people all over the planet when they knew full well. I will never believe that there was one person that handled subprime loans or all these weird mortgage instruments who didn't understand what he or she was doing, that it was a complete massive scam. And then to compound the problem and drag the rest of the planet into that part of it that had to do with bad mortgages, they packaged this stuff up and said, hey, look what we have. You're going to get rich. So, but again, that's only part of it, just part of it. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. At the bottom of this hour, we will have... is this our last little missive from Laura Pickles Bush, one that was presented on this program in 2004. This had to do with the run-up to the second election stolen by her husband. This one from John Kerry, and her take on what, Kathy?
On why everyone should vote for Bush.
Oh, that's right.
A second time after his accomplishments the first go-round.
Yeah, weren't they wonderful? Email here real quick from Paul regarding blaming poor and working people with bad credit for what happened. Paul writes, I agree with Tom Hartman's assertion that the American dream, so-called, is a living wage. Maybe if everyone were making a living wage in this country, we wouldn't be worrying about people not qualifying with home loans and other credit. Yeah, and Paul wrote here, but that's the pertinent part. Yeah, that's absolutely true. We so often lose sight of that. And as far as not being guaranteed a home, that owning a home is a privilege instead of a right. I guess in the truly literal Republican social Darwinistic sense, that may be true. But didn't the Declaration of Independence have something to say about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? Now, how do you define the pursuit of happiness? Could it be owning your own home? I don't know. I'm always fascinated with Republican or conservative reasoning. I'm not trying to diss the two callers who called in, who identified themselves as Republicans or conservatives. I'm not trying to disrespect them at all. But I am always fascinated by, excuse me again, what passes for reasoning where it concerns these social issues in the minds of Republicans or conservatives. There is a cold edge to all of it that is just bound to fail. It's a doomed philosophy. Republicanism is no good. I mean, it is no good at its core, because rather than pointing out the fact that only cooperative efforts have ever succeeded where it concerns human enterprise, whether it is building a city or building a house or farming. Farmers are individuals, Mike. You know what I'm talking about. Cooperative efforts are so necessary for any human enterprise. The Republicans would tell you, no, it's individual. It's the individual. No, it isn't the individual. What individual built Interstate 75? What individual put together the U.S. military or is the U.S. military? What individual? I mean, I can go on and on. That idea of the rugged individual, there may have been a time in U.S. history when that was applicable, but it certainly hasn't been so for the past 150 years. The day that Republicans or conservatives cease to have this misbegotten idea that the individual wields this great power where it concerns the social safety net that is supposed to be where we live. The day that happens will be the day when I'll be able to say, well, welcome back to the human race, brother or sister. Because the attitude that most Republicans have about any of these issues is just outside the human family. It's some isolated little place where they can sit in the corner and say, well, I did this, I did this. You don't want to scream at them. No, you didn't. What the hell are you talking about? You did it. You may have provided the individual energy necessary to get your ass moving, but only because there is this vast social network that has taken 232 years to establish behind you. That's the only reason you succeeded. I mean, you didn't start with nothing and build yourself. Oh, yes, I did. I didn't have any money in the bank. I'm not talking about money. What? You built? What did you do? You first built an educational system? No. Let's go back before that. You made sure that your parents were able to feed you? No, and give you good nutrition so you know. Let's go back before that. You made sure that your grandparents fed your parents so that they would be healthy, so they could have a health. See what I mean? I mean, this is how these people, all you have to do is pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Well, who in the hell bought you your first pair of boots? Don't tell me you bought them. I mean, it just goes on and on and on and on. I mean, it's one thing. Sure, everybody appreciates the individual dancer, the individual pianist, the individual artist, the individual hero on a battlefield someplace. But that person does not operate in a vacuum. And this is what Republicans, conservatives, as far as I'm concerned, have constantly tried to jam down the throats of America. Well, it's rugged individualism. No, it isn't. It's a cooperative effort and spirit and work that has produced whatever we are, for good or for ill. Republicans want to destroy it and replace it with something else. To hell with Republicans. Just to hell with them. So sick of it. And so is the rest of the country. Prairie 2 sent in a postscript here regarding the currency. I said it's worthless. It's just paper. Nothing backs it. Prairie 2 writes, the backing of currency is always misrepresented as needing a huge mountain of gold to cover every paper dollar. Well, that's kind of what I said, right, Prairie 2? It has never been done that way. The premise is that the government fixes the price of commodities. Gold, silver, copper, nickel were the easy ones to do as the supply changes very slowly and the government just buys any surplus for a reserve. Other than that, if you print too much money, you get inflation, and too little, you get deflation and bank panics. FDR fixed the price of all commodities during World War II, which is what really made the war economy work so well. Truman continued it after the war, but when the Republicans took over Congress, they ended it, causing farm prices to plummet, and that put half the country back into a depression. It also caused runaway consumer inflation and began the debt economy, a bubble and bust over and over until we get to where we are today, where all the money is in the hands of predatory corporations and the mega rich, and everybody else is in debt to the company store. Prairie 2. Yeah, I wish all of us understood the economic system better than we do, because very few of us do. Very few of us understand this, how this works. I wonder why economics on a fairly elementary level is not taught in elementary school. You know, why not? All right, back to phone calls. We have Pickles here in a little bit. Who's next in the barrel? It would be Rob, who's calling from Mount Iron, Minnesota. All right, Rob, welcome to the program. Listening on Sirius, Rob is. Hi.
Hi, Mike. It's nice to talk to you again.
Yeah, my pleasure.
We're doing a great job. Let me tell you, as I listened to you about 6 years ago. I caught you on a station out of Madison, and it's where I couldn't hardly believe there was somebody that actually talked like I thought, you know?
Yeah,
thing I'm going to go for is that, you know better than I do. 60 years ago, didn't the Palestinians and the Jews actually fight off the British to be able to get their country back? Am I wrong?
Well, the British mandate, the British took over that part of the Middle East after, after World War I. And the British mandate was expiring, and there was the Jews wanted the British to leave very quickly. The British were going to try to work out a compromise between Jew and Palestinian, and the Jewish immigrants didn't want any part of that. They wanted to establish their country. So what they had to do was push the British out as quickly as they could and also take over the country by fighting the Palestinians. So In the purest sense, no, Jew and Palestinian did not fight against the British, but would that they would have. Rob, got to go. Thanks. I appreciate you checking in, pal. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M.
Never say never.
Redefining Anger Management. It's Mike Malloy, only on Nova M Radio.
21 past the hour. All right, back to your phone calls. The number here, again, 800-989-1480. Nathan is calling from Covina, California, listening on KTLK. Nathan, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me, Mike.
Sure.
Yeah, I was just, I heard that, I was listening to the program tonight, and you were discussing what's going on in Israel and Gaza and all that.
Well, right. not me tonight. I've spent the entire time during the invasion talking about it, but tonight I played a piece from a Jewish member of parliament in the U.K., a member of the House of Lords, and his statement on the floor of the House of Lords, that's probably what you heard.
Yes, that's exactly. I mean, it was a segment,
right.
You know, couple breaks before this break. And I was just calling to recommend a book to you to read.
Okay.
Called Judaism Discovered. The author is Michael Hoffman, H-O-F-F-M-A-N-N, I believe. Yeah, mm-hmm. Michael Hoffman.
All right, now let me ask you before you go on. Is this book about Judaism, the religion, or is it about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict?
The title of the book is Judaism Discovered.
Right.
So, yes, it is about Judaism. And the subtitle of the book is The Study of the Anti-Biblical Religion of Racism, Self-Worship, Superstition, and Deceit. And this is the author of this book. This was his life's work. And
Can you synopsize it in about two sentences?
No, it's a 1,000-page-plus book.
all right, just a general overview of what the author is writing about.
He's basically exposing Judaism for what it is compared to, because there's basically two branches of Judaism. There's the Sephardic and the Ashkenazim.
Right.
And the Sephardic are the true Jews, the indigenous to that area where they live, and the Ashkenazim are the the Zionists, basically. And he breaks it down. I haven't read the whole book, to be honest.
Is the author Jewish?
What's that?
Is the author Jewish?
No, I don't believe he is. He's American.
He can be American, but is he Jewish? If he is not Jewish, I would be hesitant to read a book about Judaism written by somebody who's not Jewish. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, he has a PhD. I don't believe Hoffman is a Jewish name, but
it's German. It may be Jewish, but you understand my point. If somebody were going to deconstruct Catholicism, and in a book. I would be happy to read it if it were written by a Catholic.
Correct. No, I understand your point, Mike. Totally understand your point, but I don't think that you have to be Jewish to deconstruct or to analyze or research Judaism.
Well, to analyze a religion, no, I don't think you have to be of that religious belief. But the title, Judaism Discovered, I would expect the author would have to be Jewish, either by birth or as a convert, in order to have the audacity, I guess is the right word, to write a book titled Judaism Discovered. You understand my point?
No, I understand your point, but you have to understand my point that I don't think that if I'm a Protestant, if I write a book that's about Judaism, and I do all the research, and the author has employed people that understand Arabic, they understand the Jewish language and all that.
Mm-hmm.
That it's tremendously researched. All I'm saying is I'm just putting it out there. It's a book that you might want to.
I'll try my darndest to check it out, Nathan. I have to tell you that I've got a reading list about as long as my arm. I'm ashamed of myself how little reading that I have done in the past, the past 5 or 6 years. The focus in this family, and Kathy has the same problem. We're both voracious readers until we got focused on the horrors of this Bush administration. And that's where so much of our energy has gone. But I have written it down, Judaism Discovered. And the author is Hoffman, is his last name?
Hoffman, his first name is Michael Hoffman.
Michael Hoffman. I promise you that I will make an effort to get my hands on this book. Thanks a lot, Nathan. I appreciate it.
I still read. I read Green Eggs and Ham yesterday, yes. And tonight I was reading a Lemony Snicket's book.
Right.
So I'm still a reader.
Yes, you are.
I'm still a reader.
Yes, you are. And Molly is extremely grateful. Thanks, Nathan. We'll be back after the break for a quick visit from, and this will be the last one, from Laura Pickles Bush. Stay with us.
Ready for Radical Talk Radio? Make mine Mike Malloy on Nova M.
25 before the hour. All right, thanks to who wrote to me? Deb? Who sent this in? Oh, well, the guy Michael Hoffman, go to Wikipedia.org and look it up. He's one of these Holocaust deniers, so screw it. You know, to Nathan, who called in, you see, now I don't even believe your name is Nathan. You know, when I have people call in here and use this program to promote something as ridiculous as Holocaust deniers, and this Michael Hoffman has also written books that say, or a book that says, white slavery in this country was as bad as black slavery. So, no, sorry, Nathan, not interested in the book. And anyone else, if you want to check out this Michael Hoffman, go to Wikipedia.org and you'll find it. So I had a feeling, I just had a feeling that that's how it was going to turn out. All right, Pickles from 2004, the run-up to the second stolen election by her drunk husband, George W. Bush. Pickles addressed Americans. She was talking to everybody. Here she is, ladies and gentlemen, Laura Pickles Bush. Goodbye, Laura.
My fellow Americans, wives, mothers, and moderate Republicans, I'm Laura Pickles Bush, and I want to tell you about some of the fabulous accomplishments of my husband's first 4 years in office. I woke up this morning, and while I was enjoying my Sanka and Bushy was pretending to read the paper, the sun was shining in New York City. It was like the good Lord was saying, "Cheer up, Laura. Cheer up, America." As a great poet once said, "The sun'll come out tomorrow. Bet your bottom dollar there'll be sun." Now, I don't condone gambling, but what that poet has said has certainly turned out to be prophetic. Thanks to my husband, there's never been a better time to be an American than now. Aren't we lucky? After all, if you're not a real American, one minute you could be picking up a carton of unfiltered Camels at Walmart, and the next minute you could be hauled before a military court, sentenced, and shot before your family even realizes you're late for dinner. Until Bushy hit the trifecta on 9/11, none of us had given much thought to the Middle East at all. Up until that lucky day, when the president or I heard people talk about the Middle East, we just thought they were referring to Maryland. Despite the lies being spread by the godless liberal media, my Bushy is proud of his active military service during Vietnam. Just look how well he fills out a flight suit. You ladies and log cabin Republicans know what I mean. To tell you the truth, I used to have a scrapbook with pictures of my handsome husband taken when he fought fearlessly for an undetermined amount of time defending Alabama from hordes of advancing bloodthirsty communist Viet Cong. They were the cutest pictures of Bushy up in his jet, up in the sky. In fact, I had many pictures of my husband from that era flying high as a kite. Sadly, all of those beautiful, cheerful photos were removed when the CIA searched our home in preparation for this campaign. As a woman who fully understands that cleanliness is indeed next to godliness, I jumped for joy when my father-in-law, Poppy, asked if I wanted the CIA to clean our files. It didn't occur to me until I'd lost all those adorable photos and bail receipts what he really meant. No, my husband is overjoyed to be a war president and has demonstrated his fabulous catastrophic successes as commander-in-chief in the ongoing, never-ending, unwinnable terror wars. I have a message for the liberated people of democratic Iraq. Thanks to my husband's courageous invasion and subsequent slaughter of much of your populace, you will no longer have to fear the rule of Saddam Hussein. Gone are the torture chambers, secret police, and Baathist corruption. In their place are Camp X-Ray, Abu Ghraib, a trigger-happy occupying army, and Halliburton contracts. For those anti-American French fry-eating pinkos who believe that the removal of Saddam was unnecessary and unprovoked and that we should have focused on capturing our true enemy, Osama bin Laden, I say why quibble over terrorist regimes in desert lands filled with non-believers who murder in the name of a false religion? True Christian patriots just split the difference and aim for the towel. Some un-Americans have criticized my husband's valiant efforts to secure our great freedoms by limiting or eliminating most of them in the USA Patriot Act. All I can say is that you non-patriotic unpersons don't know what's double plus good for you. You flower children are not fooling anyone. People who make a big to-do about so-called civil liberties are usually up to something. For goodness sake, if someone is reading a book that doesn't start with, "In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth," it is suspicious. I have devoted nearly 2 years out of my whole life to toiling in the classroom to educate our young before landing a rich husband, so I know the importance of reading, but I also know the importance of what you don't read. A wise man once said there ought to be limits to freedom. Whether our otherwise healthy citizens are checking out the Anarchist Cookbook or renting a Michael Moore movie, they need to be contained immediately so the anti-American filth they're exposed to doesn't poison others who don't engage in the dangerous gambit of venturing beyond Fox News for their information. On the domestic front, thanks to my husband's fantastic and wise fiscal policy and tax cuts, our economy has never been stronger. Oh, certain half-Jewish, French-looking, married-to-uppity, foreign-ketchup-heiress, unpatriotic fake veterans whine that Bush's budget was irresponsible in that it both spent fortunes on allegedly outmoded military stuff while giving money away the government doesn't really have to corporations and other rich Republicans in the form of tax cuts. Like there's a problem with that. We have a lot of enemies out there, and with each speech my husband gives, we guarantee at least three more. When our very safety is at stake, it's no time to quibble over billions and billions of taxpayer dollars. Now is not the time to cut defense spending. We need ultra-sophisticated jet fighters, smart bombs, and billions of dollars of other heavy artillery to fight the peasants armed with rocks and box cutters. Anyone who tells you differently is a traitor. So I have a special message to my fellow lady voters out there. Remember, when the non-hero John Kerry speaks against enormous tax windfalls for the rich, well, he might as well put on an Axis of Evil uniform and kill all your husbands. Anyone who speaks out against tax cuts hates your husbands and wants them dead. As you know, my husband considers himself a man of God as well as a man of sound science, which explains his position on stem cell research. Several questionable scientists suggest that we should cut up little embryos in order to develop so-called experimental drugs. That is just ludicrous. We don't know that new drugs would have any effect that would be better than, say, Xanax. Besides, as far as I'm concerned, there's been quite enough experimentation with drugs in this household to last a millennium. And we don't even know that modern science stuff is even real, much less that it supports the hard scientific truths and evidence about the origins of the universe that are spelled out clearly as day in Jesus Christ's best-selling biography, The Holy Bible. Before I leave this evening, I do want to clear the air on one final point. Carl has let it seep out in the press that I just may be pro-choice. And while it may comfort soccer moms out there to think that I might be a voice of moderation in a household headed by a delusional religious crazy zealot, you can bet your bottom dollar that if I had to live through the soap opera interrupting torment of raising a couple of hell-raising fetal alcohol harlots like Jenna and Barbara, I'm sure as shooting gonna do my damnedest to make sure none of you gals get it any easier. The left-wing crazies tried to accuse my mother-in-law, Barbara Bush, of the same thing when her husband, Poppy, was in the White House. But I'm here to tell you, no matter how much that old crone hates Neil, she would never lessen her chances to play one son against the other by thinning the herd. So please, I would strongly advise each and every one of you to embrace pro-lifeness now. Georgie has already signed the partial birth abortion ban, and just as soon as he finishes smearing John Kerry, he'll be packing the Supreme Court with ideological clones of Antonin Scalia and Clarence Thomas, and then before you know it, Roe v. Wade will be overturned and poof, abortion will be illegal again, and our country's Chinese dry cleaners will be doing a brisk side business in wholesale wire hangers. I want to thank all of you for coming out today for this photo opportunity. I know that many of you probably sit around thinking that you don't do nearly enough to make sure Georgie retains the fabulous Oval Office this November, but rest assured, just by being here, you're doing your part to guarantee another 4 years in office. See, we can all do our part in this great country of ours, even you little people. I'm Laura Pickles Bush. God bless my husband, God bless America, and God bless almost all of you.
God have mercy. Is that it? That's the last.
Well, Pickles came back every year with a big Christmas to-do, but, you know, you can't revisit Christmas every night.
No, you can't. But that was the last one from her, huh? She didn't send you anything as she was exiting on helicopter one from the South Lawn?
I'll check, but not to my knowledge, but it may turn up later.
Oh, please, no. Please, no. Oh, my God. All right. Tomorrow night, Friday night, we will have a two-parter. We're going to have to do half of it in 1 hour and then the other half in the second hour. An overview, in his own words, of the 8 years of criminality, mismanagement, egregiously unethical and immoral conduct by this rat bastard who was recently relieved of command and sent back to harass the people in Texas. What did I read something today? The only network that carried his, that's right, his return to Texas was Fox Schmooze. Not the least bit surprised. All right, stick around. Time for a couple more phone calls when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Ten before the hour, thanks to our engineer Ian Huff, our technical advisor Ben Birch, our military affairs correspondent Sharon Gordy, our ethical advisors Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, and our economic advisor Bruce Enberg. Executive producer of this program is Catherine Bay. Quick email here. This is from Ira Gottlieb. I can give his last name because you'll know who he is in a second. Hello, Mike. Though I usually hate it when sycophants start their phone calls with this statement, I do enjoy your show. As for the subject of this email, I recognize the oxymoronic nature of it, but you did set the bar very, very, very low. Name one good thing Republicans have done in the last half century. Here's one. Nixon signed the EPA. He probably didn't like it, but he didn't veto it. And here's another. If I'm remembering correctly, he signed the amendment to the Civil Rights Act making gender discrimination in employment illegal. One more thing. He resigned. I hate to be defending Republicans, and I rail against them every chance I get. You may remember Marcy Winograd, my spouse, taking on a congressional race in the Democratic primary in 2006 against Jane Harman, who called herself the best Republican in the Democratic Party when she ran for governor in 1998. But I rose to the challenge, perhaps inspired by the momentary fake bipartisan atmosphere. Enjoy the airwaves and keep the pot stirring. Ira Gottlieb. Thanks, Ira. The bar was set very, very low, wasn't it? But, yeah, I keep forgetting the fly in the ointment is Dick Nixon. He really is. There were a couple of things, as Ira points out, that Nixon did that are laudable, extremely so. Whether he did them willingly or unwillingly, like signing off on legislation establishing the EPA, is really immaterial in the bigger picture. It was done by him on his watch. So, and I forget that. I forget a lot of the decent things that Nixon did because he was such an overblown megalomaniac. It is so easy to lose sight of some of the good things that he did do because of his larger than life craziness. Matter of fact, this weekend, I think we might go see Frost and Nixon. Is that the title of it, Kathy? Frost and Nixon?
Just Frost Nixon.
Frost Nixon.
Yeah, with the Ron Howard film.
Yeah, right. Well, whatever.
Well, it was nominated.
That's true. It was. So thanks, Ira. I appreciate it. Back to the phone calls. Marge. Marge is calling from Indiana. Hey, Marge. Welcome to the program.
Well, good evening, sir.
Hey, good evening to you.
I picked a good night. Pickles, you are a caution.
Is
And I do hope you won't be a total stranger and come back and visit once in a while when the fancy strikes you.
Yeah, it may happen. I have mixed emotions about it, but it may happen, yeah.
Well, anyway. Listen, Toodles, I don't know whether it got to you or not, but in the Chicago area, there was two movie critics, blah, blah, got to get these keys fixed.
Yeah, I think so.
That was commenting on all the stars that gathered for the inaugural and the parties before and then the day itself and whatnot. And they referred to the fact that even Mr. Potter was there with his twin brother, his evil twin brother, might add.
Yes.
Did you get that one?
I did. I did indeed.
It just tickled me so that I wanted to be sure that you heard about it.
Yeah.
And the other thing that Channel 5, I'm talking Chicago tonight, Channel 5 announced in their 5 o'clock news, are you ready? Your
right.
old stomping grounds.
Yeah.
WLS
yeah.
made an offer to the governor of Illinois that if he would resign, they would give him a Sunday afternoon talk show. I couldn't wait to call you up and share that with you.
Oh, my God. Only Sunday afternoon, huh?
Well, that's what's been offered so far. You know, what can I tell you?
Oh, God. Oh, WLS is just, it's just a sump hole of right-wing garbage. And it used to be a station that at least gave the appearance.
What did they used to call it, entertainment?
Yeah, well, that. But there was a time there with Nate Clay and Nancy Skinner and Ski
yeah.
Anderson and me. Of course, Ski and Skinner only had a Sunday program. Nate was on.
They were on Saturday and Sunday for a while, and then they shaved it down to just Sunday or just that.
Well, they
cut it in half.
Yeah, they tried to expose some of the criminal activity of what's his name? Who was the guy from the House in Illinois? How soon they forget?
Rotzenkowski?
No, the Republican.
Oh, Henry Hyde.
Yeah, Hyde. That's right.
And, rule of law.
Yeah, so they were spanked by having one of their days taken away. And then, of course, Nate Clay He had to do his program from like what, 1 o'clock in the morning until 4 o'clock in the morning or something. It was
I managed to stay up until your show went off the air, and then I hit the sack, you know.
I hear you.
But you're the one that got me started into being a night owl. Then I turned the radio off and go read for a while.
Uh huh.
So.
And then you decided that it was either your health or that stupid radio program. So you chose your health, right? Oh, my God.
Oh, mercy.
All right. Well, there is hope, Marge. There is hope if you've been following Obama's activities. There is hope.
I mean, it's like somebody, you know, threw open the windows and let in some fresh air.
It is that indeed. Marge, I got a boogie. Thanks a lot, dear heart. Take care, Marge. We're out of here. We are out of here. We'll see you tomorrow night. Tomorrow night, two-part review, in his own words, of George Bush and the damage that he did to this country. Oh, my God. And the revelations are going to keep revelating as Obama rescinds some of these directives and executive orders. We're going to find out just how criminal and how vile and filthy and anti-American and anti-democracy and anti-U.S. Constitution they really were. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care, okay? Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.